one night with his family, and then we took off and we went down to Niagara, to the Niagara by the lake, and saw Niagara Falls and did things like that. And then we ended up in Ottawa, and we spent one night in the Elgin Hotel, Lord Elgin, and got back to Kingston. But just to get away, the relief was just a change. It was great.
Did you have a high dropout or failure rate? Or did they mark you that heavily?
We don't know. Everybody stayed. Mm-hmm. Well, there's the odd one disappeared. Mm-hmm. There was a roommate of mine, a lawyer, and he began to act queerly, very peculiarly. He became very depressed. I couldn't get him to talk to me. And I finally went to the M.O. and I said, I suggest that you have a chat with so-and-so. And he didn't finish the course.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever hear what happened to him?
No, I didn't. That was my own close personal association with these chaps who, I don't know what they call it, what you call it, but he just couldn't stand the pace.
And you would think, being a lawyer, having gone to law school, which is renowned for the pressure you're under, you could have handled it. How did you personally react to it? Because you had not experienced anything like this before, I should think.
No, I'd never experienced anything like that, and I never want to again.
Yeah.
How did I react to it? Well, every opportunity I got, if I had any time to spare, and the weather was good, I'd get out of the confines of Fort Frederick and go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'd walk maybe for, two or three hours.
Alone?
Alone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where I found some solace. And what I would think of, what I was thinking of, what I couldn't tell you now.
There'd be thoughts other than the work.
I just closed my ears and eyes to the pressure,
mm-hmm.
and walking by myself seemed to do me. I'd come back to the work again. I'd feel refreshed.
Yeah, well, that's to your benefit, because if you dwell upon something, you do become depressed.
Yeah.
You can't get that off your mind.
Well, that's what I realized, and that's why I did what I did.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was the most intense period of my whole war service.
Mm-hmm.
Was that militia staff course.
I think
after having taken that, nothing would faze me.
Not even the enemy, I guess.
It couldn't even scare me. The
Did
only
they...
thing I didn't like was the aerial bombing. When they dropped anti-personnel bombs, that really put the wind up me.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but that at other times...
No control over the situation at
all.
Well,
that was it. I just felt so bloody helpless.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, tell me... Do you think that the way they handled the staff college was the right way, and that they could have done it any way differently?
Boy, you'd have to close that for a minute. No,
oh,
I can't. No, I think at the time it was the right kind of training for the individuals who were being trained.
You really had not much choice, because they didn't know how the war was going to go on. They needed you there then.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And apparently my party was not... It certainly wasn't tactics.
Mm-hmm.
I came to deploy troops in the field. I'd have felt most inadequate.
Yeah. Well, what's your point?
Well, apparently it was administration, because that's where I went, and that's where I stayed, in administration.
So it pigeonholed you?
Yeah. And apparently that's what they found out during the staff course, that my party
mm-hmm.
was administration.
Yeah. So they put the best men where they're going to do the most good.
Well, that's what they were hoping to put a round peg in a round hole.
Yeah.
And that's what it did, because certainly I could see when I was a staff course that fellows like, particularly Jean Allard,
mm-hmm.
they were the tacticians.
Mm-hmm.
And they could set out and see a picture of an action, whether it was attack or defense, much more easily than I could.
Mm-hmm. Second nature to the
world. Yeah, and I just, when I was at the course, I used to wonder what was wrong with me, because I couldn't see things the way they did. Hence, I was in administration. That's where I stayed.
Did you get any time off after the course?
Yes, we had just time. I had time enough to come back to Victoria and have about, in those days, no flights. It took me 3 days to come from Kingston to Victoria.
That's right.
And 4 days to get back to Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was here, they told me that I was to report on such and such a date to the RTO, Railroad Transport Officer,
mm-hmm.
at Halifax. That's all the instruction I got, and I got the tickets, so on railroad tickets. They sent it all from... I got it all before I left Kingston.
Mm-hmm. How long did you have in Victoria then?
I had about 7 days.
Mm-hmm. Not much, is it?
Not really, no.
Yeah.
But, as I say, I thought, oh boy, when Pearl Harbor was bombed, I thought, oh, trained staff officer, he knows the Pacific coast, he's going to stay right here. What a surprise. Find yourself going right back to Britain.
You see, captains don't initiate such orders.
Oh, by the way, I got my majority while I was at war staff course.
Did you? In recognition of the fact that you were at staff college? Or
no, I got it in recognition of the fact that the Calgary Highlanders had a vacancy
mm-hmm.
on their staff, or in their establishment, for a major.
Mm-hmm.
And what they did, they transferred me to the Calgary Highlanders, and then I was seconded right the next day from the Calgary Highlanders to 6th Brigade headquarters.
But would you be still your name on the lists of the Calgary Highlanders?
Yeah, I was transferred out of the Canadian Scottish into the Calgary Highlanders,
mm-hmm.
and then seconded from the Calgary Highlanders 6th Brigade headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And so I became a major in the Calgary Highlanders.
Did you have to wear? I guess there's no kilt and tartan you have to wear.
A story to that too. So by majority, it had been Army Overseas. Routine orders said were slow in coming out, so
mm-hmm.
it wasn't until I got back ready to go down to the staff course. No, by the way, because I was a Calgary Highlander,
mm-hmm.
my barracks or depot was Calgary.
Really?
So I got to Calgary. I had to get off at Calgary. I couldn't come right through to Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
I had to get off at Calgary. And then I went to see the A&Q in Calgary, and he says, well, this is your depot. We've got any money to send you out to Victoria. If you want to go to Victoria, you pretty well pay your own fare. So I paid my fare and returned to Calgary, and I had to call in at Calgary again before I went down the war staff course. And when I was calling in at Calgary on the way down to the war staff course, the A&Q, Colonel Greer, I met him in the lunch hour up in the officer's mess, and he says, Adam, here's something for you. So he hands me a crown,
mm-hmm.
and he says, that'll be drinks all around. And there must have been about 50 or 60 officers. It was kind, very kind of him.
Yes.
So as a matter of fact, I had to go to a friend of mine and say, will you pay my mess bill? Because I needed the money to get across to
see a family.
To the other way, to get to Kingston.
Mm-hmm.
And so his name is Kennedy, Spider Kennedy. He says, sure, I will. So as soon as I got some pay at Kingston, I sent
him.
I sent him the... Well,
after your leave, you went straight to Halifax and crossed over on the Cuba.
That's right.
Okay, and you reported where and to whom?
time to get the information.
Would you have been told?
We were told. Somewhere or other, I got the information that I'd been posted as staff captain, A Group, Canadian Infantry Reinforcement Unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at a place called Whitby.
Mm-hmm.
So I got off the train at Farnham North, and it was New Year's Eve, or thereabouts. And when I got off the train at Farnham North, a chap came up to me and he says, "Are you Major Adam?" I said, "Yes." He says, "Well, come with me." And he introduced himself. He says, "My name's McCullough." And he says, "I'm he was staff captain, A Group, and so I went with him, and I found that I was on the staff of Brigadier Hamilton Gault.
The Hamilton Gault?
The Hamilton Gault, yeah. Great guy.
He'd lost a leg, hadn't he?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And his, he called his false leg Horace.
After anyone in particular.
I don't know. Anyway, I tell you stories about him.
Would you please?
Yeah. Well, I reported in, and I met Hamilton Gault, and we were billeted. Our headquarters mess was in a little farm called Borough Farm. He was away. His wife lived down in Taunton, and he was away over the New Year's period. But when he came back, I met him, I never met a finer gentleman in all my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was with him first of January until the middle of March, 1941. 1942. And then I was posted as DAQMG, 1st Canadian Division, under George Perks.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little bit about Hamilton.
Oh, Hamilton Gault.
Did you work intimately with him?
Yes, oh yes.
What stories have you got that you can tell?
Well, I had a bedroom right underneath his. And at nights, every once in a while, I'd hear just slightly audible mumble, mumble, mumble. And then I'd hear stomp, 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 stomp. And then there'd be silence, and I'd go to sleep. And the odd morning, I'd come down at breakfast, and I'd say, "You didn't sleep very well last night, sir." He said, "No, he's that son of a bitch Horace was giving me a lot of trouble." Well, apparently he was a bucket type amputee. It was right up in the hip.
Mm-hmm.
And these amputees get what they call phantom pain.
You mean the leg that isn't there starts hurting?
Yeah, the leg that isn't there starts the nerves, nerve ends. Apparently they make you feel as if you got a cramp in your toe, you got a cramp in the big muscle in the back of your leg.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way that apparently it'll relieve it is for it to get up, put the leg on and walk on it.
Really? Is it psychosomatic almost?
Yeah, I presume it is. But I, in my experience with the Department of Veterans Affairs, I came across quite a number of amputees who all say they got phantom pain.
Mm-hmm.
And when I happened to know from the experience with Hamilton Gault what phantom pain was.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have a great deal of sympathy for anybody who had an amputation and then gets this phantom pain, because it's real.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. Even though the leg isn't there, you can, and it's relative. If the pain, if if that right leg isn't there and the pain is down in the big toe, it's there, right there.
Well, the brain reads it as being there,
that's
no matter
right.
if the leg isn't there or
that's
not.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah.
And if you got a cramp in the big muscle here, Hamilton Galt told me that he used to grab a hold, put the leg on, and grab a hold of the back of his leg to try and get that cramp out of the muscle. And it was a wooden leg.
And it would work?
Yes. He said either that or walk.
Uh-huh. There's certainly more to the mind than meets the eye, isn't it?
Apparently.
Yeah.
But I used to ride with me a nice big Buick car. I used to love to get him to ride. We'd go out on, not in space, but just ride around the camp just to see how things were.
Mm-hmm.
And there'd be odd, he always had his flag up, his brigade flag up. And there'd be the odd soldier who wouldn't salute.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, heavy would. He would salute him. He'd turn around, take his hat off, and go like that to him. We had another experience. He said, Adam, he said, the home guard in Chittingfold needs someone to go down and give them a talk on the Blacker Bombard and the Spigot Mortar.
Mm-hmm.
And when he said that, it went through my mind, what the hell's a Blacker Bombard and what the hell's a Spigot Mortar?
Yeah.
So I said, well, sir, are there any pamphlets on this? And he said, you've never seen one? I said, no, sir. Well, he says, you'll have to do it. So I went down, I got a pamphlet, and I read up on this pamphlet, and when I got down there, I asked there was a sergeant in charge, and the platoon officer couldn't come that night, and the sergeant was there. And I said, do you have a Blacker Bombard? I said, do you have a spigot mortar? No. I said, do you expect to receive them? Oh, yes, we'll be getting some soon. And we just wanted to know, we wanted to find someone who could give us a talk on it. Well, I gave them a talk on it because it was right out of the, but it was out of the pamphlet. I had to draw on it. They had a blackboard there, and I drew what a Blacker Bombard looked like and what a spigot mortar looked like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all I could do.
Did they ask any questions?
I probably told them not to. I said, now you're just as wise as I am. But anyway, after the lecture was over, there was a lance corporal there, elderly lance corporal, and I had a nice chat with him. There was the sergeant, he was a very nice chap, and they thanked me very effusively, and I went back to the barracks. And at breakfast time the next morning, Hammy Galt said to me, how did you get along last night, Adam? I said, with what information I had, I did the best I could. And he said, well, by the way, who did you meet? Do you remember the names of any of the people you met? And I said, yes, sir. I said, I met Sergeant Nugent, and I met Lance Corporal Milne. Oh, he says, you didn't. You met that Corporal Milne, did you? I said, yes, sir. But he says, you know who he is? I said, no, sir. He says, he happens to be Field Marshal Lord Milne, former chief of the British Imperial Staff.
The last corporal.
And this Lord Milne had been responsible for the mechanization of the British Army. up until the wartime.
Well, what was he doing in a home garden?
He was living in Chittingfold.
Uh-huh.
And he just said, well, I'm home guard now. I'll join the home guard. Be prepared, sort of idea. And here he was, Lance Corporal Milne. So he said, he and Hammy Galt, this was put up. This was a put up job. He and Hammy Galt were pals. And John, he said, we'll have Lord Milne for dinner. And he said, I'll get him, he'll come up and he'll give a lecture on mechanization of the British Army to the troops. So Lord Milne came up and he gave the lecture on the mechanization of the British Army when he was chief of the Imperial General Staff. And then he came to dinner. Well, That was one of the highlights, you know. And you, in this case, a fool's rush in for age and food to tread.
Well, when you met again at the dinner party, what was it like?
Oh, he and Amy Galt were just having me on. Lord Milne said, "Oh, you gave the most delightful lecture."
Did he know anything about the spigot mortar and the other thing?
No.
No?
Well, he'd heard of them. Uh-huh. Because I asked him, "Well, have you heard of these things?" Well, he must have, because I was invited to talk on it.
I imagine that when he had set you up, for this, when he asked you to give this talk without you knowing anything about it.
Harry Galt set me up, sure. Yeah. He sure did.
Sounds like he had quite a sense of humor.
Well, he's a terrific person. Well, when I was commanding the militia group, he was coming out to inspect the Patricius at Work Point. And he asked, apparently, the commanding officer if I was still around in Victoria. The commanding officer told him I was now group commander. So Hammy says, "Ask him if he'll take the dress rehearsal for me." Mm-hmm. Which I did. I went down and took the dress rehearsal for his... They did a troop for him. And then I had a nice chat with him the next day when he actually came up and took the salute himself and marched past. Mm-hmm. So that's the last I saw him.
He lived to a ripe old age, didn't he?
Apparently, yes. But he was no chicken when he was out here, and I guess it would be 1957 or 67 or 60. Oh, wait a minute. 67.
Mm-hmm.
Or 68.
Yeah, that's a long time, because it was in what? That would have been 54 years. My date's right, about 50. About 54 years after he had formed the
battalion. The,
that's right, 1914.
Yeah. Of course, he was a young man when he did that.
Yeah.
And,
Well, he had to have been.
Yeah.
It's funny, when they did it, there was a stipulation whereby he could never command the unit in wartime. He could only be I think he was a brigade major?
Well,
or 2IC?
He was 2IC when they went overseas.
Uh-huh.
When the Patricius went overseas. Yeah.
But a great personality, anyway.
And he was effervescent.
Mm-hmm.
Just bubbling all the time. And he was just full of joie de vivre.
Was the difference in your rank any barrier between the two of you, or did you...
In the mess?
In the mess, or at work, or...
Oh, well, of course, you paid due deference as a major. You paid due deference to your commander.
Mm-hmm.
He was a brigadier. And it's a strange thing, you know. As a major, a brigadier to you is a pretty big shot.
Mm-hmm.
And, sure, you always pay due deference, but in the mess you were on, you're equal. You just call him Hammy.
Did he?
Yes. He insisted on it.
Really?
And he says, "Don't you? Rank doesn't mean that much here."
Mm-hmm.
In the mess, he says, "We're all officers and gentlemen." And he says, "We're on an equal footing."
Mm-hmm. Though it must have been awfully... at first, at least, rather strange to be dealing with this almost legendary figure.
Yes, yes,
he was.
He really was. He was a legend, no doubt about it.
Yeah. You had not met him before, I take it?
No, I hadn't. No, I didn't meet him until that, when McCullough introduced me to him when he came back from his Christmas holidays or New Year's holiday.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you went from that, you were... Two IC of this brigade? Or was it brigade major?
Who?
Under Galt. What position were you under Galt?
I was Staff Captain A.
Staff Captain A. And you were there until March of 42.
Yeah.
And which was the command?
And I went to 1st Canadian Division headquarters as DAQMG.
Mm-hmm.
And under George Perks. Well, George Perks I knew.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had instructed me at Work Point here on some of the courses that I'd taken as a probably qualified captain to major.
Mm-hmm. Had you known him well, or just on a professional basis?
Just on a professional basis. I didn't know him personally. You know, I wasn't any personal friend of his, although I was a friend of his wife's brother, but we didn't see too much of George Burks except when we were work point on taking courses.
How did you find him at the time?
I liked George Burks. He wasn't a man that he wasn't warm like Hamilton Galt.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, even as serving on his staff, I didn't see as much of him as I saw of Hamilton Galt.
Mm-hmm.
Consequently, it was just on army business, so to speak, whenever I had occasion to see George Burks.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had an A and Q above me who had the close contact with him.
Mm-hmm.
See, and you have an A and Q who's a half colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a staff captain A, or AAG, a major, and you have a DAQMG, a major. And you funnel all your problems through your A and Q.
So you're...
you're one step down.
Yeah.
So there's the occasion when the A and Q was away, for instance, I would move up to A mess and act as A and Q.
Mm-hmm. But what basically was your function? What were you doing for first div?
All the looking after what you call the welfare of troops. That's what the... Well, DAQMG is the quartermaster side. He's looking after the supply.
Mm-hmm.
And making sure that your services of supply are functioning, like your Army Service Corps, your REME,
mm-hmm.
your ordnance, and anything dealing with the quartering,
mm-hmm.
like the comfort of troops. That is the physical comfort. That's the only way I can class it. And then on the A side, you have everything pertaining to appointments, promotions, retirements. It's the and spiritual welfare, because under you are the padres. Well, they're on a net with God too. But you have the responsibility of the spiritual side too,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you make sure that your padres are doing their work.
Yeah. How many padres would you have assigned to a division?
In each division, well, there's a senior chaplain, RC, and a senior chaplain,
Protestant.
And then, depending on the battalion, for instance, we had the Van Dues.
Almost all RC, I should think.
Well, practically all RC, so there's generally a Roman Catholic chaplain with
mm-hmm.
them. And most of the other battalions would have each battalion would have a padre.
Mm-hmm.
And he can be either Presbyterian or Methodist or Congregationalist or, well, as long as he was what you kind of call a nonconformist.
Mm-hmm.
So
the idea was that he could handle anything.
That's right.
What about Jewish, or were there very many Jews in...
There was a Jewish chaplain, but not within each formation. There was, I don't know where he came in the line. He was on a complete different net altogether, but they did come around.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think they were either Army...
Or Corps.
Or Corps. No, even when I was at Corps as a DAAG, there wasn't a Jewish individual who was sort of under command, the Corps commander,
mm-hmm.
within his precincts. He came from, I don't know.
Yeah.
But there was the odd one in chaplain service, in uniform, in the Canadian Army.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a side of Army life that we tend not to think about too much. Do you think it performed a necessary or important function?
Oh, I'm convinced it does. Oh, my, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, especially the battalion chaplains.
Did the men really have access to him and make use of him?
At any time. He was available, and this is these men were really dedicated.
Mm-hmm.
And you could go to your padre if you felt you were being badly abused or something had happened that you weren't happy about. You could go to your padre, and your padre had access to the commanding officer on a direct net. And he could explain these things to the commanding officer.
Don't you think, though, that could be undermining some degree of authority?
It seemed to me that the chaplains were very careful that they didn't.
I guess they would.
They must have been. I can't recall any case, or any. Had the odd chaplain come to me too,
mm-hmm.
with individual problems of some of the individuals of his particular church or religion or whatever it may be,
mm-hmm.
and we'd try to straighten it out.
So they did have some effect on morale.
Very much so. Very much so.
Yeah, it's something that even I tend to ignore as well.
I can only quote from the experience, and I didn't, as I say, I didn't serve with the Canadian Scottish,
mm-hmm.
but they had a padre by the name of Seaborn who's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't one of the Canadian Scottish that I've spoken to that just doesn't worship that man.
Really? Why? What? Just the man himself for what he is? Or?
Just the manner of the man. The Canadian Scottish think they had the best padre in the whole of the Canadian Army.
Mm-hmm. Do you share that belief?
Having seen the man come out and visit, you can feel it. You just two of them, two, the padre and one of the officers, the padre and one of the former men who served with this Canadian Scottish, you can feel it. Just talking, just listening to them.
He must be a very special human being then. Well, how long were you at First Div? And you had joined them in March 42.
Push that off. I've got my record here somewhere.
Okay, we're back again. Your old brigade was training, preparing for Dieppe, which wasn't too far away. Did you know about what was going on? Have any inclination?
Oh, yes. I knew because Sherwood Lett was then commanding 4th Brigade.
Mm-hmm.
And I went down to visit him. And he asked me, he says, if I can get you as my staff captain, if I can get you as my staff captain, or something equivalent to that. Will you join us? I said, gladly. So he tried to get me, and he had a brigade major then, and it was Ben Cunningham. And Ben and I had worked together. And Ben and I just worked like this.
Yeah.
And so I was very happy to have gone to 4th Brigade. And that was just before. They'd done their training down the Island of Wight,
mm-hmm.
and they were at a place called Mayfield. And I went over to visit them. I spent the evening, as a matter of fact, I spent the night there. And this is when Sherwood Lett asked me if I'd like to come with his brigade headquarters.
Mm-hmm.
And I was only too happy to go.
And you knew that their destination was to be Dieppe?
Well, they didn't know where they were going.
Mm-hmm.
But they knew they were going to put a attack in. They were going to make a cross channel sortie.
This didn't faze you even. Well, I guess if you were brigade headquarters, you'd be on board ship throughout the attack, wouldn't you?
Yeah, they had their command ship.
Yeah.
The Sherwood Lett didn't get off the ship.
Mm-hmm.
They landed back at Gosport, and during the Dieppe raid, I was beachmaster at New Haven.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to welcome back the Fuse MR.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I met Joe Menard again and helped him up off the ship.
How bad a shape was he in? Bad, wasn't it? He was wounded 3 or 4 times?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of course, he was full of narcotic.
By that time.
But I've got a story about that too. That was one of the things that I wrote a report on. And that was the length of time the hospital train stayed. And then instead of taking them right up to Horsham, we had a general hospital at Horsham.
Mm-hmm.
They put them on board this British hospital train, and they took them during the night up to Marsden Green in Yorkshire.
What was the point of that?
God only knows. I've never been able to figure it out.
Beyond comprehension, at least for us.
As a matter of fact, I was wrong. Sherwood Lett did come in and do it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I also helped him into the hospital train.
He was wounded as well?
Oh, he got a great big chunk of steel right in here, right in the shoulder pad. He took his whole shoulder blade out.
And this is while he was on board ship?
Yeah. The ship got hit, and this chunk of steel, and the shell just shard, made a shard of this chunk of steel, and just the whole right shoulder blade, left shoulder blade was just practically smashed to smithereens.
How did you feel, having been a member of the brigade, seeing them come in like this, in the shape they'd come in?
I wasn't happy.
Did you think that it was... Even now, maybe I shouldn't even ask this question, because it doesn't really pertain to what we're doing, but do you think it was worth it? What they learned?
Well, yes, I think it was worth what they learned, but I think the big thing they didn't do was to prepare for their coming back. We, as the Q side, A Q side,
mm-hmm.
didn't know until 7 o'clock in the morning that the raid had gone in,
mm-hmm.
and we had to get down there to New Haven.
And prepare for 5,000 men coming back.
Right.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah. And by that time, I think the whole south of England knew approximately where it was going in, if not directly where the raid was going, because it had been canceled and brought back on.
That's right. Well, it was during that cancellation period
mm-hmm.
that Lett and I, he wanted me to come.
Mm-hmm.
He had a staff captain that he didn't feel too happy with.
That staff captain, that he survived the...
Well, staff captain got either the MC or the DSO.
Really?
It's a fact.
Was he on board ship with...
Yes.
Why was he given the medal?
God only knows, but he got it. I think he got the... I'm pretty sure. It was either the MC or the DSO.
Mm-hmm. Was he wounded at all?
I don't know the story.
Make an interesting story.
I know it would make an interesting story.
I know, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, let's end it right there, sir, because I'm almost out of tape.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's end it right there. We're almost out of
time. Okay, Chris.
Thanks very much.
Right on.